Ladies and gentlemen, the sound of the weekend, it is here. Happy Friday. It's the Bob Rose Show. Greg Cassidy's here. Your time check. Brought to you by Hayes Jewelers, where the answer is always yes. I don't even want to talk. I want to eat donuts. Apple fritters.
Oh, yeah. Our new favorite.
Apple fritters. And they've got to be done right. Don't give me a doughy one. There's a certain finish.
No.
That a real apple fritter has. It's got to have like a crispness on the outside.
Just enough.
And it's got to be soft on the inside, but not mushy.
Until you get a little apple bite in there.
And the apple has to have a perfect balance of sugary kind of coating, but not over, not too much, just perfect.
Well, we have found our local connection for donuts.
Our connection?
Yes, our connection. Uh-huh. And they have the best apple fritters I think we've ever had in our lives.
Yeah. You know, it's not bad. Not that I want to take any business away from them. For its element.
Yeah.
Publix. They're actually
pretty
good. Yeah,
they've got some good stuff. Yeah, they do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that in particular. All right. So we were going to talk about climate change, and a respected meteorologist who has been bucking the system. Chris Martz is his name. So if you want to get familiar with him, he should be calling in any minute now. But it's Chris Martz, M-A-R-T-Z. All you got to do is do a quick search on it. It'll come up right away.
Yep.
Weather and climate for the curious and open-minded. So this is interesting. He's going to set the record straight on things like, you know, these wildfires. In this case, it goes back to the Canadian wildfires that were last summer. So, is global warming responsible for Hurricane Ian? And his evidence says no. I just thought it'd be interesting to have somebody like that on. And Greg is connected with him. He's the one that told me about it. And anyway, we were hoping to have him on, but...
Well, one of the big, you know, we saw that headline, you know, a couple of weeks ago, and this just shows how they just lie. Hottest day ever was the headline. Ever. Okay, what does ever mean? That means for all of time that we've been recording temperatures. But then you get to the story, and it says, since 1940. Well, I'm sorry, unless it's that new math, since 1940 to now, that's not forever.
You wonder who's really behind all of this, because you instill fear into people. The fear helps to push your agenda, which is this green agenda.
Yep.
Green as in move money or line your pockets. Because who's really taking advantage of this whole green thing? Well, China mostly.
Yeah.
Because China is selling us products like solar panels. Because, hey, you want to be green, and we'll make them cheaper than anybody here. But at the same time, they're building literally hundreds of coal-fired electric power plants, hundreds of them, a year. I'm not exaggerating this. Mm-hmm. Of course, you got to do a deep search. Don't go on Google.
No.
Because to find out this stuff, DuckDuckGo is pretty good. And you'll find out now. How can you make sense of that? What do you mean? Because they're in it for the money. The climate thing, I believe, is, well, there's some truth to it. Not that I agree it's man-made, but climate's always changing. Look.
Sure it does.
I was out west. Big cliffs of granite. Mm-hmm. Now, that wasn't because the wind blew and the dirt blew off the rock and the rock was exposed. No. Millions of years ago, there was an upheaval underground. The same thing that makes the geysers go off.
Right.
Is the same kind of power underneath that rumbled and pushed so hard, it actually broke these granite slabs. And we're talking mountains with 11, 12, 13,000 feet.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Think about the forces. So this planet has always had heat inside of it, and it's always changing. So, you know, this is the new religion of the left. Oh, it's not new anymore. But, yeah, and you can remember back, like I was, in elementary school, you get your little scholastic reader.
Oh, yeah.
And but then, you know, they told you that the Ice Age was coming.
We're all going to freeze today.
Now, and I'm going, yeah, it's the scholastic reader, right? You know, big deal. But then Spock told me.
Well, that was believable.
Remember he narrated some of the kind of shows?
Leonard Nimoy? Yep.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And when he told it in his, you know, commanding voice.
Sounded legit.
He goes, will Earth survive?
Yeah.
And then I said, wait, I already live in the coldest bedroom in the house.
Wow.
Because, you know, we were in Michigan then. Uh-huh. And I go, it's going to get colder? And then Jimmy Carter shows up on TV wearing his nice cardigan sweater. I go, that looks warm. And then he tells my parents, hey, keep the heat down. You don't need to have that thermostat above 40. Okay, that's a mild exaggeration. But anyway, remember when he did that? Yeah. I'm like, I'm already shivering. Thanks, Jimmy Carter. Let's go to this climate issue we've been talking about. Mm-hmm. The Davis-Gainesville Chevrolet Skylines. And Bill, you're on the air.
Yeah, I won't go into a lot of detail on this thing, but look up the mini ice age and tell me about climate change on that one.
We've had mini ice ages.
Yep.
We've also had mini heating periods where historical records are of them growing, you know, commercial grape. Well, not commercial, but grapes in enough of a variety or whatever to make wine. Date backs, I believe, the 1500s, somewhere in there. So that was a warming period, at least for the Northern Hemisphere,
right?
Because normally that was an abnormality, and it had to occur over a long enough period of time to develop and grow the grapes to make it worthwhile. So, and that's just one example, and you know there's going to be more. And I think I still have it, and maybe I'll dig it out. I have a summation, if you will, of headlines over the last over 100 years, major headlines, and they vary between the ice age is coming or global warming or the temperatures are rising, back and forth, almost on a yearly basis.
Yep.
And then sometimes even in 1 year, it'd be both the ice age is coming and you know, the planet's warming. Let's go to the Davis-Gainesville Chevrolet Skylines. And Scott, you're on the air.
Hey, Bob. Welcome back. This climate change business where man has the hubris to think that he can change the weather. And not coincidentally, we think we can genetically toy with organisms and have it turn out just fine with no problems. And we think that we can play around with portals in Europe, the CERN. We think we can play around with portals and rip them open and reach into another dimension. Mankind has a long history of trying to construct a Tower of Babel. It just isn't good enough to accept God and that we are his creation. We have to place ourselves in the place of God, and then we create and do whatever we like. And we are going to learn our lesson sooner or later, and it's not going to be pretty.
I think it's all going to come together. God will come down. Or Jesus, in a spaceship. And all the Jews will go, finally, we right? And then the Christians will all go, well, it's the second time here, but we're not going to argue over it now.
Yeah.
So that comes together. Then science comes together. Because, they're on spaceships. Mm. I'm just throwing it out there because I'm high on DayQuil.
That's it.
Donnie, you're on the air.
Yeah, good morning again, Bob. Yeah, we've had mini ice ages, and we've had mini warming periods. But before that, we had snowball Earth. We've had the whole Earth covered in lava. Isn't that a sign of a temperature moderation, which is the ability of this planet to sustain life, that we're not having full ice or full lava? The moderating temperatures have created the conditions for life on the planet, especially for humans. Everybody looks right by that.
You mean there's maybe things that sort of insulate the planet, if you will, like the atmospheres and stratospheres, but also the oceans and land masses and other things and currents? That's possible. Frank, you're on the air.
Yeah, all I can say about global warming is that what created the Great Lakes?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
Hmm.
Yeah, something had to melt to fill them their lakes.
Hmm.
Because let me tell you something. Those lakes are massive. That's why they call them the Great Lakes.
Oh, really?
You know, you can remember all
I just thought it was a compliment.
Here's how you remember the name of all the Great Lakes.
Okay.
Holmes. Huron, Ontario, Michigan, Erie, Superior.
There you go. Holmes. Gotcha. Now I know.
There's some things. See, I'm remembering a lot of stuff from school now.
Yeah, wow.
Starting to come in handy.
If you could have only remembered it then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah, well.
9:16 on the Bob Rose Show. Greg Cassidy is here, 30 minutes away from things that make you smile. But, hey, feel free. We're opening the phone lines. Davis-Gainesville Chevrolet Skylines, 877-975-9825. Call in any time. But we won't answer till the commercials are over.
Yeah.
I hope you're having a fantastic morning. Good morning. It is 9:21. You're tuned to the Bob Rose Show. Greg Cassidy is in the house. Morning, Greg.
Good morning.
Did I do the time check?
I don't know. You can always do it again.
Brought to you by Hayes Jewelers, where the answer is always yes.
There you go.
And if you see Pierce, tell him I said hi.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Somebody called about this earlier in the morning, and I wasn't aware. And it seems like it's either a huge story or it's not. Let me explain. A lawsuit is claiming hackers have gained access to the personal information of billions of individuals.
Billions.
Including their social security numbers, current and past addresses, ooh, and the names of siblings and parents. Personal data that could allow fraudsters to infiltrate financial accounts or take out loans in their names. In essence, this is not necessarily anything new. People are in the identity theft business, unfortunately. And so it happens all the time. But this is pretty big. The allegation arose in a lawsuit filed earlier this month by Christopher Hoffman, a California resident who claims his identity theft protection service alerted him that his personal information had been leaked to the dark web by the nationalpublicdata.com breach.
Okay.
Have you heard of that? Nationalpublicdata.com? They basically are known for doing background checks.
Okay.
Well, you can imagine a company that does background checks.
Oh, yeah.
What they do is they really scan for and look for and cull, if you will, you know, pull out of personal information that's publicly available.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a lot of work, and that's why they charge you.
Gotcha.
So
makes sense.
So they have a lot of information. It's like they put your information, which is scattered out,
mm-hmm,
and what they basically do is it sort of creates a neat little file on you, and it's all mm-hmm personal information. The breach allegedly occurred, the breach itself, in April, with a hacker group called USDOD. Exfiltrating the encrypted personal information of billions of individuals from a company called National Public Data, a background check company. Earlier this month, a hacker leaked a version of the stolen NPD data for free on a hacking forum. And that was reported by Bleeping Computer, a tech site. The hacker claimed the stolen files include 2.7 billion records, with each listing a person's full name, address, date of birth, social security number, and phone number. While it's unclear how many people that includes, it's likely that everyone with a social security number was impacted.
Hmm.
That's according to Cliff Steinhauer, Director of Information Security and Engagement at the National Cybersecurity Alliance. It's a nonprofit that promotes online safety. Now, this was CBS where I found this information. Don't you feel like we are more vulnerable than, say, our grandparents were or great-grandparents? Remember the old idea of stashing money under the mattress or burying it in jars in the backyard? Now, why did they do that?
Well, they had been through the Depression. They had seen banks go under, and all their money was gone.
Yep. They saw banks go under. They didn't trust the banks.
No, not at all.
Okay. But now we trust not only the banks, but everybody with all kinds of information and data.
Well, we do all the things we were told as a child not to do.
Yeah.
We talk to strangers online. We answer things with passwords. We put information out there. I mean, come on.
We are vulnerable. And look, if you're active to any degree on the internet, you're probably exposed in some way.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And again, you have to ask yourself, if I see this as an issue and a problem, aren't there smarter people that say, look, we got way too much stuff out there on the internet, and take care of our privacy? Do you know what I mean? My understanding is that in Europe, in some countries, they're much stricter. Here in the U.S., there's no national privacy law. There's no law against companies collecting data against our consent.
Well, even not against. When we get a phone, when we get a new app, when we get a new program, we just click that little box and we accept everything in it.
Well, because if you don't check agree,
you don't get anything.
Exactly.
But nobody reads it, and it opens you up for all kinds of things.
Well, and that's where we're at.
Yep.
According to this new lawsuit, U.S. DOD, these are the hackers, on April 8th posted a database called National Public Data on the dark web, claiming to have records for about 2.9 billion individuals. It was asking for a purchase price of $3.5 million, the lawsuit claims. However, Bleeping Computer, that tech site, reported that the file was later leaked for free on a hacker forum. And they have no idea how many people could be impacted by it. And I'm not doing this to, you know, to scare people, but just something you should always do is just to be diligent about watching everything that you have and accounts and all that. And we need to hold accountable people that make it too easy.
Yeah.
You know, I don't remember getting any kind of loan where I never had to, like, sign papers and do a bunch of rigmarole. You know what I mean? And it's weird that somebody can grab somebody's identity and all of a sudden there's, like, a mortgage. Like, are they doing their due diligence on the other end of this? There are tools available that will monitor what information about you is available on the dark web, according to Michael Blair, manager director of cybersecurity firm Nucudo. And so there are services like that will help. But sometimes they just tell you, yeah, your stuff's been breached.
Yeah.
Maybe you can stop a bunch of stuff from happening, but not the breach itself. Yeah. What's it called, Greg? What's the bane of our existence?
Technology!
Because the technology we used to utilize in radio was, I don't know, circa 1920s. It's 9:28. You're listening to the Bob Rose Show, along with Greg Cassidy, live and local. Happy Friday, News Talk 97.3, The Sky. Happy Friday. We made it. It is 9:36. You're tuned to the Bob Rose Show. Greg Cassidy is here as well. And right now we've got a special guest who is joining us, Chris Martz. He's a meteorologist who, well, he goes against the grain. And good morning, Chris. How you doing?
Doing good. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, it's our pleasure. I think Greg found you on Facebook, and he was interested, and he was telling me about it, and said, hey, let's get this guy on the air and talk to him, because I think we're like-minded, but we don't have the same background you do. Tell us a little bit about your meteorologist background.
Yes, yeah, so I'm actually a meteorology student at Millersville University near Lancaster, Pennsylvania. I'm a rising senior, so I'll actually have my degree. I'm about to get into the spring next year in May. I'll graduate, have my bachelor's of science degree. But yeah, so I'm a meteorology student, and that's my background. I got a minor in emergency management as well.
Are they pretty open-minded at the university? Because, you know, you go against the grain a little bit, and is that going to impact your ability to get your degree?
No, because I'm paying the university money to go to school, so they just want my money. They don't really care all that much. There's not really a whole lot of pushback from within the university. I mean, my professors don't necessarily share my views on everything, but they have my back because a lot of them are old school, and they have my back with my right to free speech on my Twitter or Facebook page, and they understand that I'm smart, and I back my post up with data and evidence. So they have nothing that they can really say. They can't say that I don't justify my position on it. I do it in good faith. So they've had my back. There's been people that have been trying to pressure the university into kicking me out of the program, the professors to kick me out of the program, but from outside. There's been a lot of that, but they just ignore it because I have a good relationship with my professors. So that's really nice.
Well, you were probably just a little kid when this whole climate change idea kind of came about, and they started to try to instill fear in people. And I was wondering back then what this was really all about. Now, through the years, well, first of all, we're not underwater. We live in Florida. We're low anyway, elevation-wise. So, yeah, when time passes and all the prognostications were wrong, then you have to say, so what are they really trying to do? Why do you think there is such a push for people to accept climate change?
I think it's a lot of it. This goes back to the 1980s. The United Nations Environment Program had this kind of anti-capitalist, anti-oil company agenda, and they needed some sort of way that they could get policy to try and control the energy industries and I guess rein them in a little bit. And they needed something to regulate carbon dioxide emissions. They had this kind of agenda. They wanted to put the policy cart before the scientific horse, so to speak. Something that Dr. Judith Curry, she's a climatologist, she talked about this in her John Stossel interview back in October. And the IPCC, the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, was created in the 1980s, 1990s, and they used the scientific community. They assembled these panel of scientists to create these reports that basically were to look specifically for evidence of human-induced climate change and make sure the impacts were supposed to be, and put in the reports that the impacts were going to be dangerous and catastrophic. They were not tasked with looking for evidence of natural climate change or benefits of global warming, just specifically evidence that it was human-caused and that the impacts are dangerous. And so we've put out all these reports since 1990 that with each new report, the evidence, I guess, and from their standpoint, becomes clearer and clearer. And so they want to use the scientific community as a crutch to pass along some of these policies that regulate energy companies, put a tax on carbon. A lot of this with an anti-capitalist motive behind it. They use the scientific community to build a case to regulate carbon dioxide emissions, regulate oil companies. And this entire organization, the United Nations, and academia, universities across the world, and government agencies, NOAA and NASA and the Met Office, they all employ, these places employ hundreds of thousands of people whose livelihoods depend on there being a quote-unquote climate crisis. Not necessarily that there's a crisis, but at least giving the public the perception that there is one. And so if you have, as long as there's a reason to keep people alarmed, you get this money that's shuffling through through research grants to keep these people bankrolled. And so it's very hard if you're a scientist in academia, if you're a professor at a university or you're a government research scientist, it's very hard to secure funding if you go against the narrative, because it's not lucrative, it goes against the grain, and that's kind of how it is. So when the funding agencies sent out these opportunities, these announcements of opportunities for research grants, when you apply for it, these research grants, these opportunities, they have very strict guidelines. So if you say they wanted to investigate the impacts of human-caused climate change on wildfire activity in the western United States, if you apply for it and you outline in your proposal how the methods you're going to use to go about this proposal, about this research, when you apply for the grant, if you say that, well, I don't think climate change is really impacting wildfire activity all that much, but I want to look at how, say, poor forest management is affecting it, then you're probably not going to get funded. But if you're to the guidelines laid out in the grant, you'll secure your funding. And you probably get your paper published in a prestigious journal, and your work will be perceived as important. You'll get accolades from these scientific organizations like the American Geophysical Union, and you'll get press coverage, all that. It's about fame and notoriety and a lucrative career if you go with the grade rather than against it.
Wow. And, you've answered a lot of questions, the UN being at the heart of a lot of this. My daughter did like some research and stuff, and she always believed in sort of the purity of it. And I tried to explain. I said, well, you got to follow the money. Who's paying for the study is an important part of it. And you just outlined it. To get the grant itself, you've got to basically, you've already weighted it. You've already told them what the outcome is. Now you're going to back it up with the research instead of collecting data and let the science be the outcome.
Correct. It's an exercise in circular reasoning. Now, I don't doubt that humans contribute to global warming in some capacity, and most scientists, even on the skeptical side of things, agree with me that, I mean, it's not controversial to say, and the physics are very clear. I was talking to physicist Dr. William Happer, a world-renowned physicist at Princeton the other day, and he was a science advisor to the three presidents, so I had a great opportunity to talk to him. We went over the actual physics of this back a couple Mondays ago. If you double the carbon dioxide level in Earth's atmosphere from any concentration, whether it's 400 parts per million to 800 or 800 to 1600, whatever, it just takes longer and longer to double it. So it's kind of a logarithmic effect. But anyway, anytime you double the atmospheric carbon dioxide concentration, what happens is it reduces the rate at which Earth cools. The radiation goes out by 3 watts per meter squared. That increases enhances Earth's natural greenhouse effect, which is largely due to water vapor. It keeps the Earth warmer than it otherwise would be without the presence of water vapor and clouds and stuff like that. It only enhances it by about 1%. And the direct warming effect from this is for per doubling of CO2. Is only about 0.72 degrees Celsius, 7/10 of a degree Celsius. Now, the Earth has warmed, we have not doubled carbon dioxide concentrations since the pre-industrial era. We're about 50% of the way there. But the Earth it's estimated to have warmed about 1.2 degrees Celsius.
Now, go ahead.
But that is largely probably due to urban heat island effects. And, reduced cloud cover, which we don't really know what the cause of that is. There's debate in literature about that.
This really, I think you've given a lot of people kind of a renewed interest in all this, following the money, how the science can be explained. So this doubling of the CO2, which could have a serious effect long term, but when we say long term, we're talking thousands of years, right?
I think hundreds of thousands of years. But either way, I mean, the direct warming effect is very, very small. I mean, when you look at things like changes in cloud cover, which have to do with ocean cycles and sulfur dioxide concentrations from shipping fuel, which is a man-made impact, and you also look at urbanization. Cities are warmer than the rural surroundings, and that's where most of our thermometer data comes from, is the cities. Those are orders of magnitude much more powerful than CO2. And then you have volcanoes that, when they erupt, they have impacts. They're kind of a wild card. You have changes in solar activity. I don't think changes in solar activity right now have had much to do with what's going on, but I think a lot of it's tied to our oceans. They have 1,000 times the heat capacity of the atmosphere. And there's not been a lot of research on how that kind of...
Happy Friday. We made it. It is 9:36. You're tuned to the Bob Rose Show. Greg Cassidy is here as well. And right now we've got a special guest who is joining us, Chris Martz. He's a meteorologist who, well, he goes against the grain. And good morning, Chris. How you doing?
Doing good. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, it's our pleasure. I think Greg found you on Facebook, and he was interested, and he was telling me about it, and said, hey, let's get this guy on the air and talk to him, because I think we're like-minded, but we don't have the same background you do. Tell us a little bit about your meteorologist background.
Yes, yeah, so I'm actually a meteorology student at Millersville University near Lancaster, Pennsylvania. I'm a rising senior, so I'll actually have my degree. I'm about to get into the spring next year in May. I'll graduate, have my bachelor's of science degree. But yeah, so I'm a meteorology student, and that's my background. I got a minor in emergency management as well.
Are they pretty open minded at the university? Because you go against the grain a little bit, and is that going to impact your ability to get your degree?
No, because I'm paying the university money to go to school, so they just want my money. They don't really care all that much. There's not really a whole lot of pushback from within the university. I mean, my professors don't necessarily share my views on everything, but they have my back because a lot of them are old school, and they have my back with my right to free speech on my Twitter or Facebook page, and they understand that I'm smart, and I back my post up with data and evidence. So they have nothing that they can really say. They can't say that I don't justify my position on it. I do it in good faith. So they've had my back. There's been people that have been trying to pressure the university into kicking me out of the program, the professors to kick me out of the program, but from outside. There's been a lot of that, but they just ignore it because I have a good relationship with my professors. So that's really nice.
Well, you were probably just a little kid when this whole climate change idea kind of came about, and they started to try to instill fear in people. And I was wondering back then what this was really all about. Now, through the years, well, first of all, we're not underwater. We live in Florida. We're low anyway, elevation wise. So yeah, when time passes and all the prognostications were wrong, then you have to say, so what are they really trying to do? Why do you think there is such a push for people to accept climate change?
I think it's a lot of it. This goes back to the 1980s. The United Nations Environment Program had this kind of anti-capitalist, anti-oil company agenda, and they needed some sort of way that they could get policy to try and control the energy industries and I guess rein them in a little bit. And they needed something to regulate carbon dioxide emissions. They had this kind of agenda. They wanted to put the policy cart before the scientific horse. So to speak, something that Dr. Judith Curry, she's a climatologist, she talked about this in her John Stossel interview back in October. And the IPCC, the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, was created in the 1980s, 1990s, and they used the scientific community. They assembled these panel of scientists to create these reports that basically were to look specifically for evidence of human-induced climate change and make sure the impacts were supposed to be, and put in the reports that the impacts were going to be dangerous and catastrophic. They were not tasked with looking for evidence of natural climate change or benefits of global warming, just specifically evidence that it was human-caused and that the impacts are dangerous. And so we've put out all these reports since 1990 that with each new report, the evidence, I guess, and from their standpoint, becomes clearer and clearer. And so they want to use the scientific community as a crutch to pass along some of these policies that regulate energy companies, put a tax on carbon. A lot of this with an anti-capitalist motive behind it. They use the scientific community to build a case to regulate carbon dioxide emissions, regulate oil companies. And this entire organization, the United Nations, and academia, universities across the world, and government agencies like NOAA and NASA and the Met Office, they all employ, you know, these places employ hundreds of thousands of people whose livelihoods depend on there being a quote-unquote climate crisis. You know, not necessarily that there's a crisis, but at least giving the public the perception that there is one. And so if you have, as long as there's a reason to keep people alarmed, you get this money that's shuffling through the research grants to keep these people bankrolled. And so it's very hard if you're a scientist in academia, you know, if you're a professor at a university or you're a government research scientist, it's very hard to secure funding if you go against the narrative because it's not lucrative. It goes against the grain. And that's kind of how it is. So when the funding agencies send out these opportunities, these announcements of opportunities for research grants, when you apply for it, these research grants, these opportunities, they have very strict guidelines. So if you say they wanted to investigate the impacts of human-caused climate change on wildfire activity in the western United States, if you apply for it and you outline in your proposal how the methods you're going to use to go about this proposal, about this research, if you apply for the grant, if you say that, well, I don't think climate change is really impacting wildfire activity all that much, but I want to look at how, say, poor forest management is affecting it, then you're probably not going to get funded. But if here's the guidelines laid out in the grant, you'll secure your funding, and you probably get your paper published in a prestigious journal, and your work will be perceived as important. You'll get accolades from these scientific organizations like the American Geophysical Union, and you'll get press coverage, all that. It's about fame and notoriety and a lucrative career if you go with the grain rather than against it.
Wow. And, you know, that you've answered a lot of questions, the UN being at the heart of a lot of this. My daughter did like some research and stuff, and she always believed in sort of the purity of it. And I tried to explain. I said, well, you got to follow the money. Who's paying for the study is an important part of it. And you just outlined it. To get the grant itself, you've got to basically, you know, you've already weighted it. You've already told them what the outcome is. Now you're going to back it up with the research instead of collecting data and let the science be the outcome.
Correct. It's an exercise in circular reasoning. Now, I don't doubt that humans contribute to global warming in some capacity. And most scientists, even on the skeptical side of things, agree with me that, I mean, it's not controversial to say, and the physics are very clear. I was talking to physicist Dr. William Happer, a world-renowned physicist at Princeton the other day, and he was a science advisor to the three presidents, so I had a great opportunity to talk to him. We went over the actual physics of this back a couple Mondays ago. If you double the carbon dioxide level in Earth's atmosphere from any concentration, whether it's 400 parts per million to 800 or 800 to 1600, whatever, it just takes longer and longer to double it, so it's kind of a logarithmic effect. But anyway, anytime you double the atmospheric carbon dioxide concentration, what happens is it reduces the rate at which Earth cools. The radiation goes out by 3 watts per meter squared. That increases enhances Earth's natural greenhouse effect, which is largely due to water vapor. It keeps the Earth warmer than it otherwise would be without the presence of water vapor and clouds and stuff like that. It only enhances it by about 1%. And the direct warming effect from this, if we're per doubling of CO2, is only about 0.72 degrees Celsius, 7/10 of a degree Celsius. Now, the Earth has warmed, we have not doubled carbon dioxide concentrations since the pre-industrial era. We're about 50% of the way there. But the Earth it's estimated to have warmed about 1.2 degrees Celsius.
Now,
but
go ahead.
That is largely probably due to urban heat island effects and reduced cloud cover, which we don't really know what the cause of that is. There's debate in literature about that.
This really, I think you've given a lot of people kind of a renewed interest in all of this, following the money, how the science can be explained. So this doubling of the CO2, which could have a serious effect long-term, but when we say long-term, we're talking thousands of years, right?
I mean, hundreds of thousands of years. But any either way, I mean, the direct warming effect is very, very small. I mean, when you look at things like changes in cloud cover, which have to do with ocean cycles and sulfur dioxide concentrations from shipping fuel, which is a man-made impact. And you also look at urbanization. Cities are warmer than the rural surroundings, and that's where most of our thermometer data comes from, is the cities. Those are orders of magnitude much more powerful than CO2. And then you have volcanoes that, when they erupt, they have impacts. They're kind of a wild card. You have changes in solar activity. I don't think changes in solar activity right now have had much to do with what's going on, but I think a lot of it's tied to our oceans. They have 1,000 times the heat capacity of the atmosphere, and there's not been a lot of research on how that kind of modulates the climate system.
Well, I figured it did. Now, I guess the final question is, so this is the hottest day on record. This is the hottest summer. We keep hearing this kind of thing over and over again. Does the data back that up?
Well, in the United States, there's actually been very little warming since 1895. If you look at the actual measured thermometer data, the 1930s were the warmest decade. 1921, the 2012 was the warmest year on record, but 1921 was the second. And only two of the top 10 warmest years have been in the last, 30 years, if you look at the actual raw temperature data. Now, the claim that we just had the hottest day on the record globally, which we've heard about that all summer long, it was a big headline. They had the temperature, the global average temperature, they computed it down to the nearest hundredth of a degree. That's two decimal places. That's ridiculous. You cannot have that kind of precision. Even if you had a spatially evenly distributed thermometer network, it's just impossible. They get this data from what's called the ERA5 reanalysis data from the Copernicus ECMWF. And this reanalysis data integrates some past observations, and they fill in the gaps with models, and then they run it like a weather forecast model.
Yeah, fill in the gap with models.
It's useful, but it's not measurement. It's not an actual measurement. It's an estimation. And they're claiming they can get this down to the nearest hundredth of a degree Celsius. It only goes back to 1940 on a planet that's 4.5 billion years old.
Chris Martz.
No, it's not the hottest day.
Chris, love it. Love what you bring to the table. Keep up the good work. And you can find Chris Martz, M-A-R-T-Z, on Facebook and X and everywhere else. We've got to run. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me, Bob. Thanks for having me, Greg. Appreciate it.
All right.
See you all later.
All right. Have a good weekend. It is 9:49, and you're tuned to the Bob Rose Show. Coming up next, things that make you smile. 877-975-9825. Another day in paradise. Things that make you smile. Brought to you by the best dentist in the whole world, Robin Larson Dental. 877-975-9825. And Kaz, what's making you smile?
Hi, Bob and team. Beautiful day. I got these blooms. I'll make it quick because I know you're busy. 14 beautiful blooms. Absolutely fabulous. It's a record. My weather's nice now. And I'm still praying for you because I want you to feel better. And welcome back. And I love you guys and the team. God bless and God bless America.
Fantastic. Thank you. Kay, what's making you smile?
Yes, God bless America. Well, 16 years ago today, or 47 years ago today, the 16th, sorry about that, the King of Rock and Roll went into the lake, and he has come back to see me several times. Excuse me. And he came, he's still doing God's work in the light. He came when my little grandson passed. He came and got him, and I called him, and he came and got him, and he put a little cape on him, and he took him by the hand, and they flew off to see Jesus. He is still working for us. I just want everybody to know that makes me smile.
Oh, absolutely. Nostradamus, what's making you smile?
Hey, Bob, I'll tell you, I had a rough summer this year with my peppers, but they are now starting to take off. They're doing really well, and that's making me smile. And also, even though Yellowstone is one of the largest supervolcanoes in the world, and it's starting to get active, it hasn't erupted yet. So that's making me smile.
Yeah, it made me smile when I was basically riding over that territory. You're absolutely right. Chris, what's making you smile?
Well, today is my daughter's 15th birthday. It's kind of a bittersweet smile. She's getting of age, and she's a good kid, but oh my gosh, 15-year-old daughter.
Yeah, and hopefully you're starting to save for that slightly used automobile, too, as transportation Duda, man, what's making you smile?
It's the little things with me. It's 11, 12 degrees cooler this morning on my porch than yesterday.
There you go.
Perspective. Yeah.
Appreciate the little things in life. And it's all part of the deal. Thanks for making me smile today. And Greg.
Yes, I appreciate it.
And making it so we didn't have to talk quite as much.
Yes.
And hopefully on Monday, man, we're going to be fresh, crushing it again.
Look out.
And yeah. Hey, but don't go away because we're not done yet. Coming up next, it's The Smoking Gun, brought to you by Lawful Defense and Shoot GTR.
Dana Lash.
I'm all for law and order, and I'm all for the laws of the Republic, but if the Republic ain't functioning, it's the job of the people.
Now, 10 p.m. night.
If you don't want vigilanteism, then I suggest y'all get off your tufts, all y'all people in the government, and start doing what you were elected to do.
On 97.3, The Sky.
Time now for The Smoking Gun, brought to you by Lawful Defense and Shoot GTR. I'm impressed. Multiple suspects arrested Thursday, Southern California, relating to the drug overdose death of actor Matthew Perry. And there were doctors and dealers who were arrested, allegedly helped arrange and deliver ketamine to Matthew Perry. And they were also ripping him off as well. So I'm glad there was a bust. Hopefully there'll be some justice served because it looks like these folks are the smoking gun. The Smoking Gun is brought to you by Lawful Defense and Shoot GTR. On behalf of Greg Cassidy, I'm Bob Rose. God bless you and your family. Have yourself a great, safe weekend. We'll talk to you Monday morning starting at 6. Take care. See ya. Another day in paradise. Things that make you smile. Brought to you by the best dentist in the whole world, Robin Larson Dental. 877-975-9825. And Kaz, what's making you smile?
Hi, Bob and team. Beautiful day. I got these blooms. I'll make it quick because I know you're busy. 14 beautiful blooms. Absolutely fabulous. It's a record. My weather's nice now. And I'm still praying for you because I want you to feel better. And welcome back. And I love you guys and the team. God bless. And God bless America.
Fantastic. Thank you. Kay, what's making you smile?
Yes. God bless America. Well, 16 years ago today, or 47 years ago today, the 16th. Sorry about that. The King of Rock and Roll went into the lake. And he has come back to see me several times. Excuse me. And he came. He's still doing God's work in the light. He came when my little grandson passed. He came and got him, and I called him, and he came and got him, and he put a little cape on him, and he took him by the hand, and they flew off to see Jesus. He is still working for us. I just want everybody to know that makes me smile.
Oh, absolutely. Nostradamus, what's making you smile?
Hey, Bob, I'll tell you, I've had a rough summer this year with my peppers, but they are now starting to take off. They're doing really well, and that's making me smile. And also, even though Yellowstone is one of the largest supervolcanoes in the world, and it's starting to get active, it hasn't erupted yet. So that's making me smile.
Yeah, it made me smile when I was basically riding over that territory. You're absolutely right. Chris, what's making you smile?
Well, today is my daughter's 15th birthday. It's kind of a bittersweet smile. She's getting of age, and she's a good kid, but oh my gosh, 15-year-old daughter.
Yeah, and hopefully you're starting to save for that slightly used automobile, too, as transportation. Duda, man, what's making you smile?
It's the little things with me. It's 11, 12 degrees cooler this morning on my porch than yesterday.
There you go.
Perspective. Yeah.
Appreciate the little things in life, and it's all part of the deal. Thanks for making me smile today. And Greg.
Yes, I appreciate it.
And making it so we didn't have to talk quite as much.
Yes.
And hopefully on Monday, man, we're going to be fresh, crushing it again.
Look out.
And yeah. Hey, but don't go away because we're not done yet. Coming up next, it's The Smoking Gun, brought to you by Lawful Defense and Shoot GTR.
Dana Lash.
I'm all for law and order, and I'm all for the laws of the Republic, but if the Republic ain't functioning, it's the job of the people.
Now, 10 p.m. night.
If you don't want vigilanteism, then I suggest y'all get off your tufts, all y'all people in the government, and start doing what you were elected to do.
On 97.3, The Sky.
Time now for The Smoking Gun, brought to you by Lawful Defense and Shoot GTR. I'm impressed. Multiple suspects arrested Thursday, Southern California, relating to the drug overdose death of actor Matthew Perry. And there were doctors and dealers who were arrested, allegedly helped arrange and deliver ketamine to Matthew Perry. And they were also ripping him off as well. So I'm glad there was a bust. Hopefully there'll be some justice served, because it looks like these folks are the smoking gun. The Smoking Gun is brought to you by Lawful Defense and Shoot GTR. On behalf of Greg Cassidy, I'm Bob Rose. God bless you and your family. Have yourself a great, safe weekend. We'll talk to you Monday morning starting at 6. Take care. See ya.